1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. This is Your Turn, a live call-in show featuring spirited discussion and debate about issues that matter to the community. Stay with us to hear what Northwest Florida thinks. Better yet, call in at 623-1330 and tell us what you think. It's Your Turn here on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. Now, here's the host of Your Turn.
Good afternoon. My name is Renee Cicchino. I'm Corporate Counsel for the Center for Individual Freedom. And as always, I encourage you to visit our website at www.cfif.org. Well, we've got a full program today, so we're going to dive right in talking about the issue that everybody's talking about these days. Well, there are several of them, but certainly Obamacare, healthcare reform is at the top of at least the list in Washington, D.C., and folks on Capitol Hill here to help us walk our way through it and try and make some sense out of something that's pretty senseless, I think, is Dr. Paul Howard. He's a senior fellow and the director of Manhattan Institute's Center for Medical Progress. He's also the managing editor of Medical Progress Today, which is a web-based magazine devoted to chronicling the connection between private sector investment and biomedical innovation, market-friendly public policies, and improved health. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon, Paul. How are you?
Good. It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Listen, if you would, please, start out by telling folks who aren't familiar, and I doubt there are too many of them in our listening audience, but just in case we've got some folks traveling through the area, tell them about the Manhattan Institute for Policy Research.
Oh, sure. We're a nonprofit, nonpartisan think tank in New York, as you might expect. We focus on healthcare, crime, education, fiscal policy, obviously. And but from a free market perspective, so we view ourselves as kind of free market pragmatists. So no matter what side of the aisle that you sit on, if you're in favor of free markets and individual liberty, we're happy to talk to you.
Okay, if you want to learn more about them, you can find them on the web at www.manhattan-institute.org. The Manhattan Institute, or just Google Manhattan Institute. All right, Paul, I know I'm scratching my head, and for the folks who listen to me regularly, they know that I'm married to a physician, so this is an issue that I'd like to think I know a little bit about and can follow, but I have to tell you, I truly can't make sense out of what is going on, at least on the Democratic side, with the legislative proposals for reforming health care. Can you help us kind of understand when they're talking about public option, they're talking about mandates, they're talking about co-ops, what is all of that?
Oh, gosh.
You have 6 minutes to do. No, I'm kidding. Let's start with the public option. Is that still out there on the table?
It is, and this you've hit on one of the key flashpoints in the debate right now. The president and a number of congressmen who lean left feel very strongly about having a public option. Ideally, and the president has said this, it's no secret, ideally, in a perfect world, in his perfect world, rather, they'd move to a single-payer system. Can't do that. So the next best option is to offer something called the public option, which would be a plan modeled after something like Medicare, that people could buy into. Now, the flashpoint here is if that plan, which it almost certainly would be subsidized with taxpayer dollars and have the same kind of price controls that operate in Medicare and Medicaid, it would operate at a pretty fair advantage over private insurers who have to make a profit, who have to pay for their own advertising, and, of course, can't draw on taxpayer dollars to offer lower premiums to consumers. So people would hemorrhage out of the private insurance market into the public plan option. Over time, we think it's a Trojan horse for single-payer health care.
So essentially, is it fair to say that it's impossible for private insurers to compete with the government?
Well, depending on how they structure the plan, it would be very difficult. As you, I'm sure, know from talking to your spouse, it's very difficult for physicians to turn down Medicare patients. If they turn down one, they have to turn down them all. They're paid about, depending on the service, about 70 or 80 cents on the dollar, so they're getting a significant hit whenever they take a Medicare patient. And then you've got to think about what employers are thinking, which is, gee, if there's a cheaper option out there in the market, why wouldn't I cash out my employee, give them, him or her, the money, let them go buy that public plan option, and keep the savings for myself? So that's the real fear out there, is that employers would start dumping people into the public plan, and that the design of the public option, or I should step back and say this, the Department of Health and Human Services would have the power, at least under, say, the Kennedy plan that's being discussed right now, to define what counts as qualified coverage. This would be a very high level of coverage, we think. It'd be very expensive. And so the private providers would have to charge to cover their costs of that plan. They'd be more expensive than the public plan option, which, again, would be subsidized with taxpayer dollars.
Well, let's back up a little bit. I mean, I know a lot of folks wanted change on January 20th, and it certainly came on January 20th. One change we all have seen since January 20th, it seems, is the president's position on this issue. I mean, let's go back about 9 months when he promised Americans, you know, health care savings and a path to universal coverage. And he attacked John McCain for insisting on an individual mandate to purchase health insurance. You know, he blasted him for even talking about a tax on employer-provided health care. Isn't that where we are today?
Well, that's the reality of getting the money to do this. Budget analysts who have talked about this, you know, expanding to universal coverage, even through, you know, some kind of market options, have said, or at least the kind of options the president's exploring and Congress is exploring, is going to cost on the order of $1 trillion, $1.5 trillion. The only pot of money out there that's available to even get you close to that number is the current tax exemption for employer-provided health insurance. And you're right, President Obama beat McCain over the head with that, saying this was the largest middle-class tax increase ever, et cetera, et cetera. But the reality is, economists across partisan lines have said it's irrational to have that link. We ought to give it to the individual, not to the employer. And B, it promotes health inflation, health care inflation. So there are two good financial, fiscal reasons and equity reasons to change that. The president has done a big flip-flop here. He's not going to say he's going to accept it. He's waiting for Congress to take it to him and make him accept it so he won't be accused of being a flip-flopper.
Okay, that's the public option, and we can come back to this certainly if folks have questions. I encourage you to call at 623-1330, 850-623-1330. That's the public option. Mandates, that's something else folks are talking about. I think maybe it comes out of the Kennedy plan. It calls for a mandate on businesses to provide coverage or pay a penalty. Just another form of taxation, do you think, Paul?
Well, it does amount to pay or play. I mean, so that's the idea we were talking about a moment ago. So you'd require employers to pay in for health insurance. And right now, most, I think something on the order of 90% of large employers do offer health insurance. The problems are really at the small firm level, who either can't afford to, or even when they offer it to their employees, it's still so expensive that a lot of employees will decline insurance. So what they would do is they'd say, okay, now you, the large employer, have to offer it, or you have to pay a penalty. But the catch-22 there is that depending on how you structure the fine may be so cheap that the employer would say, I'd rather pay the fine and cash my employee out than continue to provide some very expensive level of insurance that the government has told me I have to offer. And that's where we think that the private insurance market would really take a hit, because employers would do the math in their head, see that they could save money and couldn't afford to offer, you know, the gold-plated plan the government was requiring them to offer from private insurance, and dump them into the public plan.
And so we're just likely going to have, well, I guess they wouldn't be uninsured if they're in a public plan, but certainly, you know, a lot of changes in people's health care and their options. If it's okay with you, Paul, we're going to go ahead and take a call.
Sure.
Go ahead, AJ. It's your turn.
Yes. I want to say something about this whole plan in general, and this has been stated for a long time that this is going to happen. I know Kennedy's a lot behind it. I remember he made a speech several years ago that he would like to have Americans have the same type of plan that they do in the House and the Senate, which is superb. But what this will do in general is this is just more government control. I know they're talking about going to procedures instead of trying to rustle up votes, just to do it that way, behind the back issue. But what this is going to do is this is just another tax, like cap and trade is another tax. This is more government control. You're going to see more. You're going to see unemployment go up. And what's really a shame is I know people are kind of hoping the Republican Party would stand up and do something. Don't count on it. They're politicians, just like the other side. You throw money in their way, they're going to buckle. If they don't, they're going to say, "Well, it's for the children," or you're going to put grandmother out of the street. These guys are so predictable on either side, and it's really a shame it's come to this. So I'm hoping the public down the road after 2010 wakes up, realizes what happened, and maybe say, you know, it's time to throw both these guys out. It's time to make you know, go back and take our own lives. So I'll let you go ahead and comment on this.
Well, and let me throw in there a second part of your comment slash question, Paul, so you can address this as well. Karl Rove recently wrote in the Wall Street Journal that if we go with the public option, if the government, if we go with some government-run insurance, we can't undo the damage. So as AJ is suggesting, you know, we might be waiting until, you know, 2010 to make it. Is it going to be too late, Paul?
Well, it's very hard, and the political logic of these things is extremely difficult, because once you give out a subsidy to any group, they fight tooth and nails to keep it, and then the rest of the people who are paying the taxes are often not motivated enough to overturn the entitlement. And of course, the more people you have receiving subsidies, and now, you know, we know that, you know, getting close to 50% of the population doesn't pay any taxes, they don't feel the sting when the cost of government goes up. And this is case in point, look at Medicare. People have been talking about reforming the program for decades. We know that it's unsustainable. Long term, it's in $34 trillion of red ink. But you haven't been able to fix it because the AARP and other lobbies have just, you know, demagogued it every time you come to the table to talk about it. That's what Karl Rove's talking about, is once you put that subsidy out there and get millions and millions of Americans involved in it, it's going to be extraordinarily hard to change it.
All right. Well, go ahead, AJ.
I want to say one more thing. Well, that may have to change eventually, because the law of economics dictates otherwise. When a nation goes broke and you don't have people funding your treasury bonds, your notes, and so forth, some hard decisions will have to be made. And that's all I want to say.
Okay, well, thank you, AJ. We appreciate the call. Yeah, I mean, I think those hard decisions need to be made right now. I'm not quite sure, and maybe we'll get to this after a couple more calls, but I'm not really sure, you know, what's the rush? I mean, I understand, you know, why they're trying to get something done, but they're talking about trying to pass something by the August break, which I think is ridiculous. All right, we're going to take another call. Go ahead, Doug. It's your turn.
Yeah, I want to ring out something that happened in my case on Medicare. And what I got a couple questions. Now, my wife was in the hospital about a year and a half ago. I want to give you the amount of the bill. Now, this is what was submitted, excuse me, to Medicare, $152,000 and $152,000 and some change. The amount that was paid by the insurance was $20,900.
Wow.
Now, the good news is that I only was left with a balance of $750. What I wanted to know is who pays the hospital, what becomes of the balance, and what happens if we're all on this kind of a plan? Where does the extra money come from? I'll hang up and listen.
Doug, that's an excellent question, and Paul, I'm gonna hand that one over to you. I have my own, impression of what's likely to happen, but I'm curious from your certainly your expertise, your perspective, what you think.
Well, I bet being married to a physician, you've got some pretty good sense of what's going on. But I think there's obviously a lot of gaming of prices that goes on. When the government says I'm going to take a discount, whatever the discount is, 70-80%, the hospital has to take that into account too, and they just raise their prices to compensate for the discount. So the list prices that you see hospitals put out on their bills are just bargaining chips, and the only people who really wind up paying those bills are the uninsured, who often face these bills and may pay them just because they're terrified of them. So that's a big problem, and it happens when there's a maze of third-party payers, I think. So you don't have any consumer with skin in the game to say, wait, that's a ridiculous price. I'll pay this but not this, and encourage providers to innovate and offer more productive, higher-quality services at hopefully lower prices. And providers and hospitals have over time learned to game this, and this is why the researcher John Wenberg up at Dartmouth has seen so much disparity in Medicaid payments across the country, even in cities, because what providers do is they bill for services. So if you put price controls on something, the provider will say, okay, you've just capped my profit margin, I'll just do more services or more high-intensity services to get that money back. It creates an extraordinarily dysfunctional market.
Well, how does this tie in then with the discussion that's going on right now, where the president has, in order to help pay for the healthcare overhaul, you know, he's calling for slowing down Medicare and Medicaid spending. He's calling for hospitals, you know, to take huge, you know, $313 billion health spending reduction to our hospitals. I mean, I guess I'm following up kind of on Doug's comment is, you know, well, what's going to happen? Are we just all of a sudden going to see a lot of docs and hospitals closing their doors and saying, you know what, this just isn't worth it?
You know, it's a good question. I mean, that's the problem with this kind of central planning is I don't think anyone really knows what the consequences would be. You know, there's this old saying in advertising that half of all advertising is wasted. You just don't know what half. And you know, there's a sense there that a lot of money is getting wasted in healthcare. We obviously know there's a lot of fraud in Medicare, a lot of fraud in Medicaid. Tracking it down is going to be a hard problem. But the things we can start to do is to create markets for healthcare insurance and healthcare dollars that ask the value question, ask the quality question. You know, one suggestion has been to, and Senator McCain actually proposed this during his campaign, bundle payments for, say, Medicare patients and say, you know, if you're a diabetic or you're someone with a very high-cost disease, here's a voucher or here's a bundle of money to go get insurance with, and that will cover your care. And then you can shop between different providers and find something that's cost-effective for you, and perhaps we let you keep a little bit of that money to encourage you to shop more cost-effectively. Over time, we're hoping that more of that bundling approach will work to bring down costs, but we think that'll be more effective if it came from the bottom up, so providers would then change their practice to meet consumers' preferences rather than meeting regulators' or bureaucrats' preferences.
Yeah, I don't think I want the government deciding that for me. We need to take a very quick break. When we come back, Paul, I want you to help me answer a question. If, you know, Kennedy's out there with his proposal, and if, in fact, they are successful and we have rationing through waiting as they do in Canada under socialized medicine, what would be the prognosis for Senator Kennedy? When we come back, Dr. Paul Howard's going to help us answer that question. So we'll be right back.
Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
We are talking with Dr. Paul Howard. He's a senior fellow and the director of the Manhattan Institute's Center for Medical Progress. To learn more about them, visit him on the web at www.manhattan-institute.org. We're going to go right to the phone lines and welcome Al to the program. Al, it's your turn.
Yes, thank you. Dr. Howard, we can find fault a lot, but I think our strongest position from a conservative standpoint is going to be identifying what our solution to the problem is. And so far, I've never heard anybody on the conservative side come up with any real solution. So I'm asking you, what should our conservative position be? And I'll hang up and take your answer off the air.
Fair question, Al. Very, very fair. I mean, it's easy to sit and, you know, shoot holes, bullets through something, but, you know, you got to give an alternative. What have you seen? Has the Manhattan Institute taken a position on any of this, Paul?
Well, we suggest a number of different policy reforms. As a 501c3, we can't endorse specific pieces of legislation, but I think a number of things would help. And let me just tick off a few of them very quickly. One of them would be equalize the tax treatment of health insurance. Right now, if you get health insurance through your employer, you get a substantial tax benefit. If you're self-employed or you just work at a small firm that doesn't offer health insurance, you have to buy it on the open market. That makes health insurance much more expensive. Individualize it through a tax credit or tax deduction. Ensure that everybody has the ability to purchase at least basic coverage through that means. That's a great idea. Get people out of the state monopolies, state legislatures, state insurance commissioners. Add lots of mandates for chiropractor care, fertility treatments, et cetera, onto the small and group markets, small group markets and individual markets in their states, driving up the cost of health care insurance. Let people buy from out of state or through regional state exchanges. That would encourage more competition. For instance, here in New York, we have amongst the most expensive insurance in the nation. It's much cheaper. Plans are available in Connecticut and Pennsylvania. New Yorkers should be able to do that. Other states should do the same thing. And then finally, I think we need to get out of this one-size-fits-all entitlement mentality that we've developed and say, look, there should be a safety net for the poorest and the sickest among us. I think that's, you know, the morally and socially responsible thing to do. But for everyone who can afford to, they should pay for their own health care and buy their own insurance. So instead of having a Medicare program that was basically, you know, a one-size-fits-all, phase out the subsidy so that we saved our tax dollars for the poorest and the sickest patients, and let other people buy their own insurance, and that would make them more cost conscious and pick better plans over time that improve quality and improve health outcomes.
Well, you know, let me go back to the first suggestion that you have, where you talk about equalizing the tax treatment of health insurance, ensuring that everyone, you know, can get health insurance for roughly, you know, the same price. So those folks who are getting it from an employer, you know, don't necessarily have a benefit over those folks who are out there, smaller businesses and whatnot. What do you think of this idea that I heard, you know, floating around today? There's a lot of talk that, you know, if in fact they do tax existing health care benefits, they're talking about exempting the unions
right.
from that tax.
Well, I think that's a terrible decision because the unions have some of the most lavish plans out there, and they're very expensive. I think as a fairness issue, that's a terrible idea. It's certainly also not going to do anything or do any of the industries a favor that have to deal with those large union contracts. So I think if we really are serious about slowing healthcare inflation and making everyone more cost conscious, and the idea would be to give everyone a tax credit for, you know, just to pick a number out of the air, $2,500 or $5,000 to buy insurance coverage, could be refundable for low-income people. Then people could buy more elaborate plans that covered more things, but they'd pay more out of pocket. So the default position, I think, for most people would be, you know, let me get good basic coverage. If you wanted to cover more, wanted to pay more, you could, but that would have to come out of your own pocket. That would help to slow the rate of healthcare inflation. It would also mean that workers would see more of the money that used to go to health premiums go into their pockets in the form of salary.
All right, under, you know, whether it's the public option, the mandates, whatever it may be, let's go to the $90 million question. Under the plan that the president is talking about, even the Kennedy option, does it change things for Senator Kennedy? I mean, would he be getting the care that he is getting right now, do you think?
Right. Well, you know, and I wish Senator Kennedy the best luck in the world dealing with cancer. It's a terrible illness. You know, the reality is that the U.S. is the global leader in medical innovation. And part of the reason is that we have a relative, and I emphasize relative, free market pricing environment for diagnostics and drugs. So a lot of innovation gets done here that wouldn't happen if the U.S. was closed off through price controls. So, for instance, the U.S. Has about 20% of global GDP, but about 50% of the pharmaceutical industry's profits are in the United States because of this lack of price controls. And that means that companies will often debut drugs first here. They will come here to develop drugs because they can get better talent, and also because, of course, the NIH is here, which does fabulous basic science research that the companies can build on. But it's possible that people, over time, this is going to slow, and I think people will admit this. Putting price controls on new technologies will slow the rate of medical innovation.
Paul, we got about 10 seconds left.
Great.
Sorry.
So cutting-edge treatments for people like Senator Kennedy would be fewer and farther between.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We appreciate your time, your expertise talking about this issue. We've been talking with Paul Howard. He's a senior fellow and the director of Manhattan Institute's Center for Medical Progress. Thanks again, Paul. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Renee.
We'll be right back after this short break.